Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen right here on 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can always keep up with everything going on here at the station by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. All you got to do is download the app from your app store. Search for 92.9. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can also listen on demand. Go back and listen to segments with the rewind feature. You can also hear previous episodes of our shows as well. Dennis Fuller, producer of the program, glad that he is with us back for another Tuesday. Of course, is my partner in crime on Tuesdays, Tim Murray's host at VSiN. He's also the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. Episodes available each and every week. Also, check out the VSiN College Football Betting Tailgate Show, 9 a.m. Central Time. Great way, especially if you're someone that likes to wait until Saturday to bet. Tim's show is a great way to get you ready for the day. You'll get all the ticketing information, who the books need, get those last-minute injury updates. You'll get it all right there on College Football Betting Tailgate Show from VSiN on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello, hello. Good to be back, and good times, man. Baseball season could be over tonight. Yesterday was the old sports equinox. Got a lot going on, man.
When did that become a thing?
I don't know. It's a little weird.
What's been around longer, sports equinox or National Tight Ends Day?
Well, apparently that's all you had to know about Sunday was National Tight Ends Day, and they're gonna every single one of them is gonna score a touchdown. Apparently, what, 16 touchdowns? I think I saw
16 touchdowns.
I think the equinox has been around longer. I at least remember hearing about it like last year. Maybe that's because we run promos at VSiN regarding the sports equinox. We've got a special running there over on our website, but I think the equinox has been around a little bit longer than National Tight End Day.
The other problem with National Tight End Day, it's like I'm not the world's biggest player prop guy. You dabble in it way more than I do, but I guess I have to set a note next year to remember National Tight Ends Day, because I don't know if this was related or not. Did you see on CBS before their 2:30 window or whatever, 12:30 window for you, they were running like a tight end U special? Like they were like recounting tight end U. Did you see this?
I did not, no.
So I guess that was the first tip off that, hey, this was going to be a thing. And then, you know, if you fired up Red Zone, Scott Hansen couldn't go 6 seconds without mentioning tight end day or National Tight End Day. I just found myself going, I guess next year I've got to remember to bet every tight end to score.
Yeah, Travis Kelce scored his first touchdown of the year. The only guy who didn't like exceed expectations was Brock Bowers, who still was fine, but he was a guy who I looked at his prop market before the Raiders played the Chiefs, and he actually went under on his receiving and receptions prop and didn't score a touchdown. But yeah, pretty much all everyone else. Dalton Kincaid scored a touchdown for the Bills. I mean, you can go down the list. Every touchdown, everyone out there.
Kittle obviously got his.
Yep.
Kittle, apparently, we also found out that not even, like, I'm an offensive guy at heart. That wasn't even a rub play, Tim. That was just a straight up knockdown. And then we get, who's NBC's? NBC's rules analyst was like, no, no, this is a good call. Is it Terry McCauley?
Terry McCauley.
Terry's like, yeah, no, this is a good call. We're all like, even Collinsworth was like, I guess I'll yield to you. You seem to be, you're the expert on this. So we had all that. We'll get into the world of college football when we get into the awards next segment. I want to start with a couple of big picture questions and kick around with Tim. We'll start with what we saw last night from the Grizzlies. I also want to get kind of a big picture thought as we saw also the Tigers take on Alabama in Huntsville. That was on ESPN+. Tim, I'm not going to have you recount those games, but I got a couple of like philosophical questions that I want to discuss with you. As mentioned, we'll do the awards during the next segment. We'll get into the list to start the 3 o'clock hour. We've had some NFL roster moves. We've also had some quarterback decisions. We have another injury update that I think was kind of obvious on Sunday, but nonetheless, we got the official ruling. Maybe even get into some Monday Night Football then, as mentioned, the World Series as well. Then for our kind of last main segment, I wanted to discuss, we've got Lincoln Riley doing more Lincoln Riley things, but yesterday over at ESPN, I believe it was on Plus, Pete Thamel kind of wrote his big coaching carousel kind of overview. And since we don't really have open jobs right now in the P4, it seems almost a certainty that at some point we will have openings in the P4, but I want to discuss maybe, could we have some people that quietly leave jobs that maybe we didn't expect? Would that perhaps get things going in motion? We'll discuss that. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But last night, Tim, over at FedEx Forum, the Grizzlies blew a 20-point lead. They allow the Bulls to shoot, I believe it was 25 of 51 from three. And I did the math based on NBA.com stat reference page. So, you know, over there, yeah, you can do the shot dashboard to see like who the closest defender was on three-point attempts or whatever, field goal attempts. Of the 53 three-point attempts from the Bulls last night, 41 did not have a defender within 6 feet, and 49 of them only had a defender within 4 feet. So I'm talking truly wide open threes. But then the other question that has arisen is, number one, Ja Morant, who did kind of, we'll take him at his word at it. On Saturday, he was game time decision. And he said, you know, I made the decision to go. And we got to this week knowing, okay, the Grizzlies have three home games. You know he's sitting out one, if not multiples. And that could be kind of the other interesting aspect of it. The Grizzlies play the Nets on Wednesday before playing the Bucks on Thursday and then heading off on the road. So will he play in both back-to-backs? Seems unlikely. But this is kind of the first question I want to start with. And I know you and I have talked about it a decent amount. What's the appropriate way to comment on a team's, I guess you can call it load management philosophy, but the way that they handle injuries? Because it does not feel to me like there's league-wide, you know, uniformity. I mean, Boston, for the most part, plays their guys. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, you know, when Giannis is able to go, he goes. When Jokic is able to go, he goes.
Bucks fans right now not too happy, by the way.
But I mean, like, all the credit in the world, like, one of the other underrated aspects of LeBron James and his stardom, like, feel however you want to feel. What I've always respected about the guys, for the most part, he played. And in a day and age where that was becoming increasingly more popular, he indeed played. But the Grizzlies do appear to me to be on the, like, if you're doing the matrix, if you will, the Grizzlies would definitely fall in one of the more extreme caution categories of the NBA. And I guess where I kind of, there's the difference between whether or not a guy's banged up and you just want to give him some time off versus, all right, let's sit him or let's be a little cautious. This could be something worse. Like, let's do all that. There's a difference between that and then guys just getting hurt. But one of the problems that I've had with the Grizzlies' approach, and this could be a sample size error, this could be not enough data, the Grizzlies have had this approach, and it's not like the Grizzlies get to the playoffs healthy. Ja Morant, every year that they've been in the playoffs, has been hurt. And they've always taken this approach. Like the Grizzlies, Desmond Bane has missed playoff time. Steven Adams previously had missed playoff time. Like there's lots of guys that have missed time in the playoffs. And it's almost like, okay, if the whole point of this is to get to the playoffs healthy and you don't get to the playoffs healthy, isn't it fair to criticize the approach? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's trying to figure it out and what's the right way to go about it. It feels like, to me, that some teams are taking the kind of reverse approach now. It was like, for a little while, it was like, you got to load manage. You can't play X amount of games. And then, I don't know, it felt like last year we were starting to see less load management that was out there. Look, you guys know much more about this franchise than I do and the injury history of Ja Morant. But, man, I mean, you look at what's going on in Philadelphia with that disaster of Joel Embiid. It is, I mean, 4 games in, you've already got to kind of manage your time. Just seems a bit too soon for me.
Yeah, and I also acknowledge there are other variables at play. For instance, part of Tatum and Brown's success is the fact that, you know, like not just crediting them because now they won a title. It's like now you put them in this different category. But the Celtics have been very good for a very long time. Yes, they did not get over the hump until last year. But part of their success, I feel like, is those two guys are pretty durable. And when you compare that to a undersized guard that has historically played a very physical, you know, oftentimes violent game, like maybe that doesn't lend itself to, like, I can accept that maybe you don't treat two players the same way. Like I can fundamentally agree with that, but it almost feels to me like when the Spurs started to popularize it, and again, I don't know if the Spurs are patient zero for this, but it certainly feels like the Spurs were who brought it to the forefront and popularized it and made it acceptable for other teams to do it. Well, maybe we should like take a step back and like, what was their approach? Well, their approach was they largely had an aging core and that had a ton of miles on it. And then you had a player in Kawhi Leonard who is a great player, but for whatever the reason, he has turned out to be injury prone. And so maybe just blindly adopting that approach, like it just feels like the league kind of went nuts on it when in reality, it's like it probably made sense for the Spurs, but the way that we do things is like when it works for someone, we all adopt it. But what I find kind of interesting is the last two teams to win titles, the Nuggets and the Celtics, like they have not done it as much as other teams. Like last year you have the injuries with Murray, but like that's not load management. That was trying to get a guy back from injury. But the prior year, like what was amazing about it was, for the most part, despite really only having kind of like a 6-man rotation, they stayed healthy. And the Celtics, like, yes, Porzingis had his injury concerns, but again, injury-prone guy that's had a history of injuries gets hurt. But for the most part, it's like they're playing their guys. And I know maybe I'm not like coherently like framing a question, but to me it just feels like it is a topic that probably needs more exploration than just then. Well, if he's not on the floor, he can't get hurt.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you've laid it out pretty well, which is, and you know, when your team is not winning and the star is not playing, there is obviously fair frustration to the situation, which I totally understand. I just think no one has kind of truly figured out the proper way to do this. Is that fair to say? And I think that's where my mindset is too, where it's like game four, you already need Ja Morant out. And we saw it, you know, you mentioned LeBron. They tried to do this last year to LeBron, which was like, we're going to limit his minutes. And within 2 games, he was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, this is not happening. And I think that's, I don't know what the proper way is to do it. And, you know, maybe I'm kind of branching off into a realm that doesn't make a ton of sense, but it's like we've talked about it on this show, where it was like when Zion was at Duke and he got hurt, right, when the shoe exploded against North Carolina.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, ah, shut him down forever.
Shouldn't play anymore.
And it's like, no, he wants to play because playing sports is what he does and he likes competing. So it's one of those weird things where I don't know what the answer is, but it certainly is frustrating as we sit here on October 29th when you've got someone like Ja Morant who's already sat out a game and, you know, the situation in Philly and plenty of others. Like, if you're hurt, you're hurt and you don't play. And I'm cool, like, I don't know, like Chris Middleton is just constantly hurt in Milwaukee and he's not ready to go. Well, he's hurt. Like, I don't know where we toe the line of, like, you really need to start doing this early. Maybe the science tells us that, hey, you got to start it early and continue throughout the whole season. But it just does to me, it seems a little bit too, I don't know, it feels like we're overdoing it a bit with certain players.
And then there's another philosophical question. So the Grizzlies, and this is where their actual injured guys come into play. The Grizzlies are without G.G. Jackson. They're without Vince Williams. And they are they're without Luke Kennard. So those three guys would definitely be in their top, at the minimum, their top 10. It's possible those guys are all in their top 8. And so the Grizzlies have made a offensive philosophical change in which they're going to play with way more pace. I mean, I haven't updated it from yesterday, but as of their first three games, they were the third fastest pace in the league. And so because of that, Taylor Jenkins has mentioned that they're flattening the minutes and more guys are playing and the stars are playing fewer minutes. Last night, Jaren Jackson Jr. plays a shade under 25 minutes. And it was very obvious when Jaren Jackson was on the floor, it's like, oh yeah, this team can play defense. And when he wasn't on the floor, they could not play defense. I do wonder, like, to me, you've seen this type of strategy of play with faster pace. I mean, to a certain degree, this is kind of what Huggins did at West Virginia when he's like, listen, if I could get Kenyon Martin, I would. I can't get Kenyon Martin at Cincinnati, so I've got to, or at West Virginia, I've got to make some changes. And they played with more pace, played with more guys, and that was kind of, they pressed all the time. And like, that was their philosophy. To me, that makes sense in the NBA if you don't really have a core group of guys. But where I'm starting to scratch my head a little bit is you have organizationally and from a basketball perspective, you have a core of Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. And you look across the board, this isn't like when Budenholzer was in Milwaukee and stars were playing, you know, 35 minutes or fewer. I don't think any of these guys have cracked 30 minutes yet. And so it is a little head scratching to me where you go, all right, the whole point of having these guys is you have them on the floor. And that's kind of where I'm starting to wonder, like, I think the theory is this. The Grizzlies, if you put them just in terms of their rotation athletically, they're probably not going to be the most athletic team in the NBA, and they're probably going to be, if not in the middle, to the lower end. And so the theory would be, if we're going to have less athletic guys, the way that we're going to get better shots is by pushing the pace, and we're going to get more open looks that way, and that's going to make up the difference for the lack of shot making and the lack of athleticism. All right, intellectually, I'm cool with that. But it does bring into this question of, are you better off if you're not playing your best players? And I'm not saying you got to Thibodeau this, that you got to play them 40 minutes a game, but it does feel like pushing them to 30 minutes would not be insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the Knicks last year, to your point, and they did push them too deep, and ultimately they fell apart in the postseason, and you know they lose to the Pacers. When you're looking at 24 minutes, 25 minutes, even though, I mean, Marcus Smart, quite the shooting performance.
He tied
night,
the
huh?
franchise record for an Ofer. He tied Jared D. Bayless.
I mean, that's kind of who he is.
Yeah, the worst part, though, is they kind of needed him on the floor because he was like one of the guys that could defend.
I know.
That's the problem. It's like Instead of that 0 for 8 from 3, could it have just been 0 for 5 or 0 for 4? But, you know, as you point out, like...
Shooters got to shoot, man.
Listen, the stats say the next one's just as likely to go in.
That was like him in Boston when he had Tatum and Brown surrounding him. He's like, nah, I got this. He's like, nah, rather you not.
I mean, it really is the Philip Seymour Hoffman in a long time.
I know.
Probably, like,
he is that gif encapsulated. Like, and almost the worst thing, I think I've said this many times before on different forums, I'm like, Marcus Smart hitting the first shot is almost the worst thing possible. Because he's just going to be like, oh yeah, I've got it tonight.
It's the night, baby.
So, yeah, I mean, he was plus 14 last night, so that's pretty wild stat sheet to have 1 point, 0 of 11 from the field, and be plus 14 when you're on the floor.
I mean, I said that this morning. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen a guy go 0 for 11 with 1 point and finish plus 14. That was something to behold. But then that gets us to the overall big picture question: How appropriate is it to get, like, I mean, this is super, I don't even know if I get super critical, but it's like, what's the appropriate reaction to when you're not even a week into the season and you feel like everybody's playing with their hair on fire? Like, in the NBA, it's like, we used to have the NBA season doesn't start till Christmas Day, and you kind of acknowledge that. Also, historically, under Taylor Jenkins, the defense always starts off pretty bad. It usually takes, if not a month or more, for their defense to kind of catch up. And almost every year, they finished in the top 10 on defense under Taylor Jenkins. So there's that side of it. But then there's also, I do think, a fair... like, one of the key pushbacks you'll hear to that is, if we all are acknowledging that we think the West is going to be hyper-competitive this year, when you blow a 20-point lead to the Bulls on a home game, and it was a night that you could have easily won the game, and it's a bad loss, can that loss end up being the one that, you know, causes you to go from being out of the play-in to into the play-in, or, you know, something worse, like from the play-in to out of the playoffs? You know what I mean? Like, I do acknowledge 82 games all mean the same, but I kind of look at it, it's like... I'd rather blow a game early than blow a game late, because I have more time to make it up.
Yeah. No, and it's hard when you think about late October and how this all kind of adds up over time, but you're still trying to figure things out. I mean, you know, a team that I've keep close tabs on because of what I do in the morning, Milwaukee, I mean, they're off to a... I mean, think about Thursday,
yeah,
and the disappointment bowl already early on in the season with Milwaukee coming to Memphis. I mean, Milwaukee's also lost to Chicago, lost to Brooklyn, and then last night they lost to Boston, which isn't a big surprise. But yeah, it is. It's pretty interesting to note some of these kind of slow starters and how things could turn around. But yeah, to be... maybe Chicago's better than I expected. I thought they were going to be kind of one of these teams that were, you know, going the pooper for Cooper type of situation. But
now, what did Scalabrine? Steve Lennox was on with us Friday. Scalabrine's been calling it capture the flag.
Yeah, I like that one.
I think, though, I think you're right. It's like, all right, it's October. Like, there's some fans that are pushing the buttons, but I do think, to your point about Chicago, it's like, LaVine goes for 30 last night, and LaVine was really good. The bigger issue I saw is there's always the desire of whenever that kind of game happens that you're going to want to credit or discredit or blame coaching. Like, I get that. I still thought the bigger problem of last night was there was nobody within, like, the same zip code as people trying to shoot threes. And so it's like you get into that point, and, you know, so... That's kind of my thoughts on the Grizzlies. But then we had one other thing that I wanted to get your opinion on, because it's now starting to become more and more commonplace in college basketball. We're starting to have more of these high-profile exhibition games. And I find myself, on the one hand, I'm not really pointing the finger at Memphis here, because credit to Penny Hardaway, they're scheduling about as well as they can. I mean, mm-hmm. We've talked about their non-conference. Their worst non-conference game is either going to be the favorite to win the Sun Belt or the favorite to win Conference USA. So, and the MAC. Like, they've made the schedule non-con as hard as they can. But it's just kind of like a big picture thought. It's like, when you see so many of these high-profile exhibition games, like, really, we just can't make these games that we put on campus and put on TV and give us something to watch? But
I don't get it. I really don't.
I know there's a charity element, but it's like there's also...
But they've been doing these for years, and then now that we have more media coverage, you're starting, oh, they played a secret scrimmage, and now then they became the charity scrimmage. Like, just... If it's an exhibition, it's an exhibition. Make it a full-blown preseason. Who cares? Like, I don't understand this, like, you know, hidden nature, because at the end of the day, we're going to find out these games anyways. You mentioned it was on TV last night, streaming.
Yeah, it was on Plus.
So, like, I don't know. I don't get it. I put them on campuses. You don't have to make them count. But, like, I heard about, like, I went to a small Division III school in Pennsylvania. I heard of two D1 schools, low major D1 schools, going to my alma mater and playing a scrimmage there. Like, what the hell's going on? It's just weird.
Well,
I like it though. I mean, it's good for these teams that they're getting, because we used to have these, right? It was like the you either play like some foreign team or what was?
Well, you always have the overseas tour, but that's usually in the summer. But like historically here in Memphis, they would play CBU, who was the D2 school, and they'd play Lemoyne Owen, who is an HBCU here, and you'd have like that. And so, okay, like that kind of like makes sense, you know, from a civic perspective. But to me, like the biggest problem that I have with it is not that these things are happening, but it's the manner in which that they're happening, because in reality, they can say whatever they want. Well, it's the charity element, whatnot. It's like, fine, have a game that is the St. Jude game during the season where profits can go to St. Jude. Like, that's all well and good. The real problem is, for whatever reason, nobody wants to schedule these games that count. It's like, because they don't want
the loss, right? I guess.
Well, and like, I know that's not, like, in fairness to Penny Hardaway, that's not his logic. His logic is like, I want the games, but we can't.
His schedule's loaded, right?
Correct. And I think what the people that would, the other side of it is like, well, we play in a real conference, and so we have those conference games. It's like, I don't know. I've been watching ACC basketball the last couple of years. That's not the ACC I knew and loved.
Maybe Arizona State doesn't want 130-47 loss on their record this year. Did you see that? They went to Duke and lost by 56.
Yeah, Arizona State is that school that I always keep waiting. Like, I feel like I've been hearing for 30 something years that it's a sleeping giant in sports, and it's like, and we're still waiting.
Yeah, are they?
Yeah, it's like maybe there's something going on that maybe it's not the sleeping giant that it is. So I think this is kind of the other question I've had, because Memphis played North Carolina 2 weeks ago, and they were feisty, and they were pretty even with North Carolina, with a key exception. Carolina shot better from three. Memphis was dreadful, and that ends up being kind of a 7-8-point loss. All right, I saw nothing there that made me feel worse about Memphis. The problem is last night they play Alabama. And so you play Alabama, and in the first half, when you're watching it, Alabama was doing the Alabama thing. They're bombing it from three. And one of the big concerns for me was Memphis is not going to be a great shooting team. But when you play Alabama and you're getting absolutely crushed in second chance points, okay, well, that might be something that's not good. Now, also, there would be the argument, well, with Alabama shooting so many threes, it's a lot of long rebounds. But getting outscored in the second chance of the first half that they did, it led you to, if you wanted to draw the conclusion when Memphis makes a big comeback and makes it an 8-point game and plays much better in the second half, you can reasonably conclude, all right, that's an exhibition game. Alabama did what they needed to do in the first half. The second half was just kind of coasting. Like, that's a reasonable conclusion to draw. It's also important to note, like, Alabama will have those halves where it looks really good and then it doesn't look good. And maybe all of a sudden, you know, if you're sitting there as an 8-point game against North Carolina and Alabama, those are two top 10 teams, that's cause to sit there and go, okay, maybe this thing can go a little bit better in non-conference. But what I've really struggled with is with these exhibitions is, like, should we just really set aside whatever we see, or should we take notes? Like, I don't know. What do you think the right approach is with these?
I think the right approach is, this is going to be a lame take, just to not get too overexcited if it's a good thing or too bummed out if it's a bad thing. I mean, to lose to Bama by 8, who is, you know, per KenPom, I want to say Alabama, where are they at? Number 4 in the country.
And I believe Carolina's 15.
Per KenPom, yeah, 15th. So I think you take away some of the positives. You don't get too high, too low. I mean, you watched the game. Did P.J. Haggerty look the part? He had 32 points last night, right?
He did. But it was 32, and I think 28 of it was in the second half. Then there's this question of...
And there was a bajillion free throws last night, too, right?
They had no foul limit. So, like, there were some... And I think, like, 69 fouls got called. So the game had no flow, and it took forever. So I think the thing with Haggerty is there's going to be this question, and I don't think we're going to solve it in the preseason. We're not going to solve it until we see real games. The question with Haggerty is, were his numbers last year at Tulsa big numbers on a bad team, or is he showing that this guy can really score? And I just think it's one of those things that we're not going to really know the answer until we get into, like, high-leverage basketball.
Yeah. And I think these scrimmages are really important for Memphis because, like, as much as a former D3 player, I like when the D3 and D2 schools get an opportunity to play these big-time opponents. What do you really gain from that? Memphis plays North Carolina and Bama, and now I think you're prepared to take on Missouri to open up the season, right? Like, you're prepared to go on the road a week from Saturday to take on a decent Mountain West team in UNLV.
Yeah.
So, like, this is a Memphis team, as you alluded to. Like, we talked about it last week, right? Where they're the only team, in my opinion, that has the opportunity in the American to earn an at-large bid. And winning those conference championships, no matter what conference you're in, always proves to be tough, especially when it's a neutral site kind of field.
No, empty
there.
Atmosphere. Like, they play at Dickey's Arena in Fort Worth. It's massive, like, 14,000-seat arena, and there's just no atmosphere.
I do a rant every March on these conferences. The AAC, a little bit different, but for these conferences that are one-bid leagues that play in these arenas that have no atmosphere, I'm like, why'd you even play conference games for 3 months? It makes no sense. But for Memphis, you look at the schedule and they pick off some of these wins and they go down to they go out to Hawaii, I should say. Did we ever figure it out? They're not coming back after the San Francisco game, right? We still not figured that out yet?
I'll ask during the break.
We've been asking that question for a while. But regardless, you go out to Maui, you get a couple wins, you pick off Clemson or Virginia on the road, you beat one of the Mississippis. Like, there are so many opportunities out there, so it's good for them. I mean, hell, you look at opening night, how many teams are playing, like, D3 squads? I mean, you've got some really good ones. You've got Baylor, Gonzaga. I mean, based off of KenPom, the fourth best game on Monday is Missouri-Memphis.
Yeah.
The fourth best game in the country is Missouri at Memphis.
Well, because now we've also started doing these, like, multi-team events now where it's, like, they're NIL opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, I have... In my backyard, I've got Ohio State taking on Texas next Monday night, which is kind of random, but I don't know. It's also kind of cool, right? But yeah, you've got the Field of 68 guys. They've got their own thing going on over in Sioux Falls. You got Charleston in Southern Illinois. So yeah, you've got some interesting ones. But Memphis doesn't mess around right out of the chute. They're playing a big time game, and it's a really good opportunity to get a solid win under their belt.
All right, I've confirmed. They're not doing something stupid. They are going to San Francisco and going to Maui. I'm telling, because I had the same reaction that you did. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into college football. Let's discuss the weekend that was. We'll hand out the awards next. But before we do that, I want to remind you that the program is brought to you by our good friends over at Birdies. It's still Golftoberfest for another couple of days. That means you can book online and enjoy half-off standard golf rates. Now is the time to book your holiday party or event. because if you can still do it before the end of October, you will get those Golftoberfest pricing. You will get the Golftoberfest pricing even if the party happens in November or December. You can DM Birdies901 on Instagram for specific dates if you want to try and work something out in particular. Also, don't forget on Saturdays, karaoke night on Simulator 2 from 7 until close. It's all located at 493 South Main Street, Suite 101. Golf at birdies.com for all the information that you need. Follow them on Instagram at birdies901. College Football Awards, when we come back, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Tim Murray, of course, is the host of VSiN Primetime, also the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, as well as the College Football Betting Tailgate Show, airing on Saturdays, 9 a.m. Central Time, gets you ready for the full slate. I guess let's start big picture if we get into the awards. From last week, it felt like kind of the theme of the week was sleepy escapes. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I would say so. Outside of Oregon, who looked pretty strong against Illinois, and maybe they weren't going to be sleepy against a ranked team. But yeah, I would agree with that. I thought certainly Penn State, even though they covered at the end, that was a very close game, turned on a pick six. Ohio State needs a late touchdown. Texas obviously wins, does not cover. So for the most point, for the most of the top 10 teams.
And I even add Florida State. Florida State covers, but that game, like, in I never
heard about Miami.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Miami. Miami ends up covering. I never really considered that Florida State would win the game, but like Miami was kind of struggling to kind of go for the gas, if you will.
Yeah, and I mean, the games that involved unranked teams were the ones that, for the most part, were, you know, spots where there was a little sleepiness. The games that involved ranked teams, you saw the ranked team, the higher ranked team, flex his muscles. Notre Dame, Oregon, Alabama, Texas A&M was the lower-ranked team. We'll talk about that game, I'm sure. And then, you know, I don't know what to do at this point with BYU, man. Like, I can't figure them out. I bet against them 2 weeks ago, got there against Oklahoma State. I bet against them again this past week thinking this was a bad spot. And I don't know if it's more UCF is terrible, BYU deserves respect, a little bit of both. But there's some of these teams now where you're like, we got to start having real discussions about undefeated BYU, undefeated Iowa State. Indiana's going to be undefeated more likely than not when they go to Ohio State. What do we do with an 11-1 Indiana? Colorado's 6-2 now and needs some help, but certainly could get into the college football, the Big 12 championship. And Pittsburgh's undefeated too. Like, there's a lot of these teams like, they're not good. And they are just continuing to win games. So it's, I can't wait for this final 4 weeks to play out here because there are a lot of kind of intriguing storylines surrounding teams that I don't think are that good, but if you keep winning and you've got this expanded playoff, like how many of these teams are going to sneak into that field of 12?
Well, I think that's an interesting question with BYU because it's like, okay, BYU, let's see, their SMU's only loss, correct?
Correct.
How many games have they even played within
Their Kansas State's only loss, too.
And how many games have they played within a possession? Like, obviously, the Oklahoma State game was. The SMU game was.
Baylor, SMU, and Oklahoma State.
Okay. I think at a certain point, it's like, I keep wondering this. Are we just maybe kind of putting the ACC and the Big 12 into a different tier? Because
yes.
It also does feel like,
even though Indiana and Pittsburgh would beg to differ, like they're not getting... The thing is, you know, next Tuesday, the most important day of the calendar because Maction returns.
Yes.
Nothing else is going on that day.
Nothing.
Also on that Tuesday, probably the second most important thing on that day, is the college football playoff rankings reveal. And I understand it's a TV show and, you know, it's all the pomp and circumstance. I'm generally curious what they're going to do. Because the AP, and I heard the fellas in the Cover 3 podcast from CBS kind of lose their mind on some of these spots. And I understand where their frustration was coming from because it's like, okay, I agree that Texas is probably a really good football team. However, what is their best win? Indiana just beat the brakes off of Nebraska. Ohio State needed a touchdown in the final 4 minutes against Nebraska to win that game, and they've got a loss. And Indiana, like, it's one of these things where I think Saban may have said it on game day, and he was the one 2 years ago, be like, we should really matter, it should come down to power ratings. I agree to an extent, and as a bettor, I refer to power ratings more to rankings. That all being said, games have to matter. BYU's undefeated with two pretty darn good wins in Kansas State and SMU. Indiana's undefeated. They don't have a great strength of schedule, but they have a common opponent with Ohio State, and they destroyed said common opponent. Like, I don't believe in Pittsburgh. I think they're fraudulent, and maybe it gets proven out this weekend, whatever. But they're still undefeated. Like, it's one of these things where I am generally curious what the committee's going to do. What's the committee going to do with Notre Dame and Texas A&M? Texas A&M lost to Notre Dame at home. But Notre Dame also has a loss that keeps getting worse by the day in Northern Illinois.
Well, I think that's kind of the other thing is there's this changing landscape. And it's changing in a lot of ways. Number one, I feel like the value of a zero in your loss column has never mattered less.
I agree. Especially power four teams.
Correct.
Like you're looking at, and here's the thing too, and I ran into this a couple years ago with TCU because I bet against them a whole bunch. And eventually they got to the national championship game, and that's when finally people were like, you got to respect TCU. And I was like, no, now's when you bet against them, and Georgia beat them by 3 bajillion points. But like you look at, and here's the thing too with these unbalanced schedules. SMU, who has a loss, but they play Pittsburgh this weekend, SMU does not play Clemson or Miami. BYU does not play Kansas State or they already beat Kansas State. They don't play Iowa State, excuse me. So like you're
and they
getting,
don't play Colorado because like Colorado is still quote unquote alive in the Big 12, but they're gonna have the problem that even like Kansas State, they all kind of play like the same three teams remaining. It feels like they all play Kansas, they all play Utah, and I want to say maybe they all play Texas Tech or they have played Texas Tech. but they're not going to each play each other. And so Colorado is going to be kind of on the outside looking in because they still have the Kansas State loss, and then they're not going to have a common opponent with Iowa State or whatnot. It's
these conferences, and I had someone tweet me over the weekend about it because I tweeted out something to the effect of, there's a legitimate shot that Miami, Clemson, and SMU are all undefeated in the ACC at the end of the season.
Yes, and because SMU, while you said they play Pitt, I mean, we don't know if Eli Holstein's going to play.
So you look around, and I mean, to a lower level for Memphis, right? They lost to Navy, but Army gets gifted this insane schedule where they don't play any of the best teams in the conference, and the Navy game doesn't count towards conference play. So Army is almost on easy street unless North Texas knocks them off to the championship game.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly,
and I don't know how to fix it. Like, I don't know. Like, I get it. We're expanding these conferences, and it was awesome that we had Oregon and Ohio State, and Ohio State plays Penn State as well. So, like, Ohio State is going to be tested again this weekend.
Well, like, we haven't even gotten into the SEC aspect of, like, all this muddling.
Texas A&M could get to the final week of the season, and their game against Texas could be meaningless.
Correct. And then,
in the sense of, I mean, obviously it would have a lot of meaning, but in the sense of making the SEC championship.
Well, and then you also have this reality of, like, Georgia needs to pull for Alabama against LSU, but then does that bring Alabama back into the equation? And, like, you're in a scenario where it's like, listen, do I think the Peter Burns 9-team, everybody 6-2 ends up happening? No, but I do think we're going to see a tiebreaker that's not going to yield probably the most satisfying of results.
And I don't know if we're like, because it's, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too, right? That's the saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll look once again on a lesser level, and I think this comes back to Memphis and the AAC. Boise State beats UNLV on Friday night in Vegas, and that's a good win for them. And Boise State right now, based off of the odds, is minus 200 to make the college football playoff. There's a legitimate shot that we don't get a rematch of UNLV-Boise State, even though it's pretty clear those are the two best teams in that conference, because Colorado State, who I'll be honest, is not very good, has four pretty manageable games left, where if they win those games, they could be playing Boise State as a, you know, 24-point underdog in the Mountain West Championship game. So, yeah, I mean, you look around college football, and we've got these monster conferences. I don't know how to figure it out.
Well, like, I mean, the way to figure it out is very simple.
Because when we had divisions,
I mean, to me, like,
we had the situation of Purdue playing Ohio State or Northwestern playing Michigan or whatever it was for the Big Ten for years and years.
And, like, even if we're just, okay, like, let's say we don't want to go back to divisions. It seems pretty obvious to me. If you're going to have a 16-team league, you can't play 8 conference games. Because that's the other thing going around right now. The SEC coaches got their panties in a wad because Texas's schedule is soft, and they were gifted a path there, and to which I also point out, like, that's also kind of dependent on other schools, like, holding up their end of the bargain. Like, when the schedule was made, no one thought Oklahoma was going to be perhaps a non-bowl team. And like, to me, it's just right. Like, if you're going to have a 16-team league, you got to have 9 games.
I mean, they played Florida. I mean, once again, like you said, like, they have Florida. They have Georgia, you knew would be good. They lost to them. A&M to wrap up the season. So I think there are other conferences that can have more of a – I mean, Missouri is just falling on hard times with their quarterback situation. But, like, preseason, we looked at that schedule and we're like, how the hell does this team lose multiple games? Now, it has happened because that's just the way college football tends to work itself out, where they got absolutely dominated by Texas A&M. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of confusion and chaos scenarios out there for the conference championship games if things play out the way that it's possible that they could play out.
All right. Who was your team of the week?
I was going to say Oregon, but I think that's kind of lame. I'll give it to A&M. I think being down 10 making the change at quarterback, stepping up on the defensive side. I know that Wegman stepped in for that Missouri game and played his best game probably his life, but like this team is just better with Marcel Reed at quarterback.
They're better running the football. The thing that stood out to me about that game, because I'm with you, that's who I ended up going with too, but have you ever seen a college football game flip like that?
No.
Because to me, that was
I had A&M, and we talked about it.
Well, we thought we were dead.
I was like, I was on the wrong side of line movement, which for me historically means I'm going to lose my bet. And I'm watching the game, and I'm like, well, I got this one wrong, 17-7. It looked like LSU was going to dominate this game. And, yeah, it just completely flipped.
It was honestly like –
A&M uniforms are sick.
Well, it did help. Then the all-white LSUs, I think, are criminally underrated, too. But that was honestly like watching a Sunday witching hour game where you just know, like, all right, well, I'm up 10 in the fourth quarter, and I know that this game is far from over. Like, that's what it felt like to me. I think you're right in the sense of if A&M is going to get into a game where they're going to have to really throw the football, I'm not sure he gives them their best shot. But if it is just line up, run the football, and that's what most of what's left on their schedule, I think he gives them their best shot.
Look, he threw two passes in the game.
It was a 31-6 second half with two passes. Now, one of them was a dime, but it was two passes.
The late game dime down the middle of the field was beautiful. Yeah, I think, look, and I just discussed this on the podcast earlier this morning, which is, I don't know how many teams you can trust. And I think that's a good thing. And that's fine. Like, we have run into, and it's not to say that I think Boise State can make the college football playoff and win it. And that's what I'm trying to get at. But, like, I could tie myself into knots on a bunch of teams. Like, could Texas A&M win the national championship? I don't think so. But they've got a legit D. I trust their coach. And they've got a playmaker at quarterback. However, to your point, doesn't seem like he could throw the forward pass all that well. So, like, if you could somehow combine forces. But, like, Connor Wegman, in that first half, I mean, have you seen, like, outside of Kyle McCord throwing three pick sixes on Thursday night, which I didn't think was humanly possible, have you seen much worse quarterback play? Like, that was a really bad half of football from Wegman.
I mean, I know the numbers are worse from Saturday, but, yeah, when he played Notre Dame.
Oh, he was bad.
But, I mean, that's kind of the
And that's the thing about Texas A&M, and that's where I go back to, what are they going to, like, as a Notre Dame fan.
Hold on, let me say this about Marcel, because I covered, Marcel played at NBA, and I've seen Marcel's whole high school career. Do I want him dropping back and throwing 50 times? No. Do I trust him to throw, like, I don't think he's a kid. Like, there's plenty of quarterbacks. Like, I have more faith in Marcel Reed throwing than I do Jalen Milroe throwing. That's how I would say it.
I mean, and once again, it was two passes, but, like, the one that he threw between two defenders was a pretty good pass. Now, do you want him throwing 50 times? Of course not. But when he came in the game, it was just completely different. Like, he had the read option going, and they've got legit running backs that if you're going to run that type of system, it could be pretty, you know, pretty successful. Look, they better not get comfortable, though. I'm telling you what, man.
They're only 2-point favorites.
Yeah, I already bet South Carolina. I mean, this is...
Well, you want to talk about teams you really can't trust. But I think this kind of goes back to the whole point. What if... Okay, I'll even set aside, what if Oregon is that dominant team? Okay, that's fine. We're not trying to pick two teams. We're not even trying to pick four teams.
Even know if Oregon's that dominant. I think they're really good.
Right.
And they seem to have figured it out. But, like, that long ago when we were like, I don't know, this Oregon team's got a lot of issues.
I'm saying set that aside because we're trying to pick 12 teams. What if no one's really that good? And now that's where I think this becomes, and this is why I think you're 100% right about Tuesday being the most interesting night of the year. If nobody's that good, I think perception's going to really matter. And that's why I'm fascinated to see, like, is the SEC and the Big Ten, like, are they going to basically get credit for being the SEC and the Big Ten?
There's going to be a couple teams, and I don't know if it's going to be the committee just doing it for shock value, but there's going to be a couple teams that are going to pop way higher or way lower than we anticipate.
Well, I mean, we know the SEC is going to have the highest ranked one-loss team. I suspect that's the other thing. It's like,
should Texas be the highest ranked one-loss team?
No, I think Georgia should.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. My bad. Yeah, but I forgot Georgia lost to Bama.
Like, to me, we have a situation where 11-1 Georgia could not be in the SEC championship game.
Yes.
They could be the highest ranked SEC team and not in the championship game. Now,
is Georgia won over Oregon, or does the Oregon win over Ohio State help catapult them to number one?
I think the Oregon win over Ohio State and the fact that they're sitting there with a zero in the loss column. And yes, I understand it's because Oregon hasn't played an Alabama caliber other opponent. That's fine. The zero is going to matter, I think.
Georgia does have, according to the College Football Power Index, the strongest strength of schedule and the number one strength of record in college football, for whatever it's worth. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I could be fine with Georgia or Oregon being one. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
Well, then
the crazy thing is, right? If to your point, like Georgia, let's say they do show up one next Tuesday, and let's say they run it out and they're one. And then they don't make the SEC championship, and they're the 5 seed.
Well, that's why I'm also kind of wondering, is there going to be a behind closed doors, hey, we can't have our number one team not in the championship game? Are they going to manipulate the rankings that way?
Tony, man, it got a little watered down. This next Tuesday, it's going to be pretty interesting.
Let's continue the conversation because I want to talk some Heisman because I think there's some interesting aspects of that. We'll continue the awards next segment when we get into the list, also get into everything else that's happened. We got some NFL transactions. We had some roster moves.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.